live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, we're in for a busy Thursday, kids. Strap in. Show number 867 at Cochran Show on Twitter. And why aren't you following me on Twitter? You know how I like when you follow me. Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Paul Coit later, live from London. Tom Rivers standing by. Now, where am I going to pick up Tom? Tom Rivers, good morning, live from London. And what is the mood in the streets?
Hey, good morning, Steve. Steely determination.
That's what we want to hear.
Again, it's kind of reinforced the words of Theresa May, the Prime Minister, just about 10 minutes ago. But you felt it. You saw it. And it it has a very much the feel the day after the attacks back in 2005 against three subway cars and a bus here. People are mindful. But they know that life has to go on, and it'll be with them emotionally for a few more days, maybe even weeks. But then life will get back to normal.
This appears to be a sole lunatic, but overnight there were raids in Birmingham, I understand?
Exactly. The latest numbers, 8 people have been arrested at this stage of the game. Birmingham, also premises here in London. We're checked out. Literally hundreds, Steve. Detectives are hitting the ground running on this one. They're striking when the iron is hot. They say they know the identity of the assailant. They're not releasing it right now. They're trying to get as much information as they possibly can before getting that out in the public domain. But yes, this thing moving very, very fast.
And Tom, yeah, the CNN reporting just now that the London attacker was born in Britain but was investigated in the past over concerns of violent extremism.
Yeah, and we've seen examples in the past. When I was in Nice, when I was in Berlin, individuals said to have been on the radar. And again, it boils down to priorities. And if they think that these individuals are not going to be doing anything, they say, okay, we'll get him off the list right now. We got to check out, you know, the in-tray, which is pretty heavy these days, and check out other people. Boils down to finances. How many dollars they have to check out all the people they can, and they can't be everywhere.
As this goes forward, we have some good news, and that's that, and we almost never hear this, but the fatality count actually has gotten better, right? We know 3 have died.
Yeah, and it has, in the cut and thrust of when these things break, the numbers can float around, as you well know. And basically, yeah, they've dropped the number by 1. So of that number 4, we know that 1 man, 1 woman were killed when the vehicle hit them on the bridge. We know that the police officer was stabbed to death about 20 yards away from the gate into Parliament. The assailant dead as well.
Tom, is this area, I mean, I've been to the Parliament, but is this area just pedestrian, or is it kind of blocked off, you know, kind of like our White House where there's, you know, the
No.
big pedway and then the big lawn? Okay.
No. You can get very, very close. I mean, the roads go back to the horse and buggy days. And before that, it was trod upon by the sandaled soles of Romans. So, yes, it is very, very tight in that area. And once you get off of the bridge, you're just literally about 80 yards away from smashing into the gate. That's what happened yesterday.
10 Downing Street is a short walk away. Where was Theresa May when this happened yesterday?
She was in Parliament, and there was a lockdown immediately. And we heard the Speaker in Parliament saying, look, we're going to cut business right now, but you're not going anywhere, with the exception of the Prime Minister. She had an armed unit straight out of a James Bond, if you will, thriller, throwing her into her silver Jag, and she made the trip about an eighth of a mile away down to 10 Downing Street, where she was camped out yesterday, held an emergency meeting there last night.
Whenever the president moves in the United States, it is literally a parade of vehicles. We saw that silver Jaguar yesterday, which looked like a one-off. Does the prime minister have a follow car in cases like that?
There was a, if you look at the film again, there was a car following a black vehicle. And, they got all the gizmos in there. So once you're inside, you're in pretty good shape.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. I know you're busy, and thanks for jumping in.
Take care.
Tom Rivers, ABC News, live in London. Tom has lived there for years and jumps all over Europe when stories like this happen. In Brussels yesterday was the anniversary of the airport attack. We don't know if that's a coincidental timing or it was meant to happen that way, but by all accounts, this appears to be one single nut who ran into French school children and tourists. One woman somehow ended up over the bridge rail and into the Thames and was rescued. But we don't overall, there's 40 injured or more. We don't know the state of the injuries, do we?
No, not yet. We don't. But, and you know, when this information was coming across yesterday, Steve, it was so confusing because we knew there was a knife attack and we knew that somebody had plowed through this, you know, this pedestrian area. So people were speculating was he wounded and passed out? But no, it was the same attacker, the same attack.
Right. One guy.
One lone person who, as we just said with Tom, had been investigated for in the past. So now the question is, was he on a watch list? Seems like he was. Why wasn't he apprehended? But you know what? I guess hindsight is always 20/20. At least we have these lists now. At least, you know, they're going in the right direction.
Well, you can't. You simply can't arrest everybody you're watching.
Right. Exactly.
And when one lunatic breaks free to do something like this, it's what you just said. It's hindsight. You go back and go, well, why didn't you bring him in before? Well, he didn't do anything then.
Right. Exactly.
6:16 traffic. We'll come back. Nick will join us in a second, and we'll get you the top six at six. Tell you what else is coming up on a very busy Thursday. And Chuck Todd will try to explain to me why the House Republican leader of the Intelligence Committee apparently lost his mind yesterday afternoon.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGNS.
World tells London whatever you need. The Eiffel Tower in Paris went dark last night in tribute, even all the way back to Orlando, Florida, where the Orlando Eye in tribute to the London Eye was dressed up in the colors of the Union Jack. America ready to help in any way, shape, or form as the people of London get back to business today. And the hashtag on Twitter that's trending and has been trending for a full day is We Are Not Afraid. One nut. Trying to turn the world upside down, and for what? Next, Trump care vote this afternoon, probably tonight. It's unclear on whether or not the vote will indeed happen even now. We'll talk to Chuck Todd about that coming up next. And about this, Devin Nunes is, is the House Intelligence Chairman. He was part of the Trump transition team, but this Intelligence Committee is supposed to be a bipartisan independent affair. It's kind of hard to do that when he got some secondary hearsay information of a secure nature that he ran to the president with and gave the president some sort of at least media cover on his idiotic story about whether or not Trump Tower was tapped. These are completely unrelated items. Nunes could not explain exactly why he had to run to the president, other than he thought it was really important. By the way, he did not go to Adam Schiff, his ranking member, the Democrat in this case. He did not share the information, and he also doesn't have the paperwork. Other than that, it's flawless. Next! Dallas Green, dead at 82. We'll talk more about this a little bit later, but certainly a major force in baseball and in Chicago sports history. Next! And a Sweet 16 today. I haven't checked the brackets, but I'm sure I'm not winning any of them. That's the kind of feel I have on this. Dave, are you doing well?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay. You got two Big Ten teams in action in the same region tonight in Kansas City, with Michigan playing and Purdue playing. I would take upsets by both of them for them to meet in the Elite Eight, but you never know.
You don't ever know. That's exactly right.
It's the beauty of the tournament.
Chuck Todd coming up to talk about all of the politics, and he'll have Governor Jerry Brown this afternoon for an interview that'll air Sunday on Meet the Press. Let's go to Nick. Nick DeGilio standing by. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm good.
No details? You're just good?
No, hey, man, it's great.
All right,
hey, you know, I didn't do the brackets this year because I lost to a goldfish last year.
That's not a good thing. Now, was it an actual goldfish, or was this a dream you were having?
Yeah, it was Rose Fish up in the newsroom.
Oh, and how did we know which picks the fish was making?
The fish like moved its head towards one of the brackets in the team, and then they randomly put it all on the brackets, and I lost to a fish.
Yeah, and not a smart fish. You lost to a goldfish.
No.
Yeah, but where's that fish now, Nick?
In a toilet, I think, somewhere.
Actually, not true. Handicapping with Brett Musburger.
Yeah. In Vegas.
Yeah, in Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Let's fly through some of these. Power Rangers, the movie. Did we need this?
No. It's, it's based on the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and I don't think anybody wants this. I don't even think the people who like Power Rangers want it, and it looks just awful. So that's your kid movie this week.
Here's the thing I don't quite understand about this, because, you know, there's a million movies that are great that never get made, that scripts sit in warehouses. There's such a great scene in the movie The Player about that, at the end of The Player. Or a guy's walking through a warehouse that just doesn't end with boxes of scripts that never get seen. It takes a lot of luck and a lot of coercing and a lot of calling in favors to get a movie made. My son is 26. He was a huge Power Rangers fan. I don't think he's going to this movie. So who's the audience?
I have no idea. There is this attempt to – every studio wants to have their tent pole. They want to have the movies that they can release every couple of years that are going to make tons of money because of stuff like the Marvel Universe. I mean, there's 3-4 Marvel movies that come out every year
right
now, and most of them make money. And you've got Star Wars franchises and this franchise and that franchise. And so I think anybody is like desperate to come up with an idea. And I think some guy in a suit in an office went, Power Rangers. And somebody didn't say no.
This will be an executive who'll be out of work by Monday.
T2
Train Spotting.
Or promoted.
Yeah, well, that's only if it makes more than $100. T2 Train Spotting. What is this?
We've been talking about, I got to say, now I'm going to sound like a hypocrite, but it's a consistent thing that we talk about on this segment, all the time, Steve. It's that who is waiting for sequels to movies that came out 15, 20 years ago?
Yep.
Evidently, I am, because I can't wait to see Trainspotting 2.
Is Danny Boyle doing this one?
Yeah, Danny Boyle did it, Irvine Welsh, based on his book. The cast is back, Ewan McGregor, Johnny Lee Miller, Ewan Bremmer, Robert Carlyle, all the regular characters are back. The trailer is unbelievable. And Trainspotting, when it came out in 1996, it just blew up. It was one of the most refreshing and insanely energetic movies ever made, and I saw it multiple times in the theater when it was released, and it's truly one of the best movies of the 90s. And and I've heard nothing but good things about this movie. I think it's going to be an exception to the rule of waiting a long time for a sequel. This is the one movie this weekend that I really can't wait to see.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with sequels that are good. I have a lot of problems with sequels that suck.
Right. And all the word on this one is that it's great. And it's the same crew. It's the same people. That's always a good sign.
Chips. I feel badly about this one a little bit because Eric Estrada's upset.
He is upset.
Yeah, he felt like this was a violation of the Chips franchise, that this is not the way Chips was meant to be.
That's right, because there's so much integrity in the TV show Chips.
Yep, that's where I was going.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Dax Shepard, who's in it, wrote and directed it. Michael Pena plays Ponch, and Dax Shepard plays John Baker, and it is a takeoff of the show Chips, but it's a horror R-rated movie. There's like full frontal nudity in it. There's all kinds of R-rated slapstick comedy and tons of explosions and motorcycles fly all over the place. And Kristen Bell, who is Dax Shepard's wife, is in the film. And I think the most interesting aspect of the story is that she plays Dax Shepard's ex-wife in the movie, and she's like this bimbo who just wants his money. And and in the script, the character was supposed to have, gigantic fake breasts and supposed to be a really evil person. So when Kristen Bell took the role, and Kristen Bell does not have gigantic fake breasts, she took one for the team because at the time when they made the movie, she was nursing her kids and breastfeeding and decided not to nurse and not to use the pump for a day and a half.
I can't speak to how uncomfortable that is. Let's go live to Mary Vanderbilt on the seventh floor.
Oh.
That's crazy.
Is that painful?
Extremely painful.
Oh, all right. That's what I thought.
Well, I saw a clip from the movie. It pays off. That's all I'm saying.
I love Kristen Bell. I love Dax Shepard, but the movie doesn't sound great.
I do, too. I'm rooting for it. I hear bad things. They're not screening it for the critics.
Ah, there's a problem. There's a problem.
Yeah, but I love Kristen Bell's one of my favorite people, and I like Dax Shepard, too, and Michael Pena right here from Chicago. Yep. Great guy. So I'm rooting for it. I hope it's good. That's the movie I'm going to see with my parents this weekend.
Well, of course it is. What is Life?
Life is a new science fiction movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds. They play there's a group of astronauts on a space station, and they come across, they discover a form of life that they discovered on Mars. They bring it aboard the ship, and then basically it's a ripoff of Alien.
I saw something gross coming out of somebody's mouth or something in the trailer. That did not look good.
Yeah. It's R-rated. It's supposed to be gross. But essentially, I mean, if you look at the trailer, it's just Alien. Mm. I mean, it's exactly what – I mean, I think it's Alien without a really cool, scary-looking monster like they have in Alien. So I'm not really sure what the appeal is, but that's out this weekend as well.
Paycheck movie, or they planned on this, and Ryan Reynolds is proud of it, and so
well,
on?
Well, the guy who co-wrote it wrote Deadpool. So I think he's doing this as like, okay, you got me the biggest movie I've ever been in. You co-wrote the biggest movie I've ever been in. So, yeah, let's get this script made because – you made Deadpool. You wrote Deadpool, and it was the biggest hit I've ever had. Mm. So I think it sounds like a favor thing.
We're a couple weeks away from Rear Window, Tuesday, April 11th at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. Will you have Alfred Hitchcock there?
Yeah, he'll be there. He's gonna make a cameo.
That's fantastic. That's what he does.
How about his daughter? Wasn't she in all of his movies too?
Cindy Hitchcock? Beverly
what's
Hitchcock?
Her name? It might have been Beverly.
I don't know.
Connie Hitchcock?
I think it was Beverly. I know you're...
Was
Same
there
man,
really but... a daughter appearance?
Yeah, the daughter would be, you know, he made the cameos in all of his movies.
And by the way, what an actor.
Toward the end, she started making appearances.
Really?
Kind of like Ron Howard's brother.
How do I not know this?
You know, appears in his movies.
Are we talking about the same person, Ron Howard? So you're saying Ron Howard's brother is Alfred Hitchcock's daughter?
No, I'm telling you,
Patricia
I'm right.
Hitchcock.
That's it. Patricia Hitchcock.
Yes.
Thank you, Google.
That's right.
Only child.
Rear Window, Tuesday, April 11th, Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. Tickets how?
That's right. Fandango.com. Tickets are going real quick now. They're starting to sell big because this is, you know, a masterpiece, one of the greatest movies ever made. You get to see it digitally remastered on the big screen. Jimmy Stewart, Grace Kelly, Raymond Burr.
Ron Howard's brother.
Patricia Hitchcock.
Patricia Hitchcock.
Clint Howard. They're all in it.
Yeah, they're all there. All right, buddy. Yeah. Enjoy the day. We got so much politics and Chuck Todd coming up. There's not enough time for the segment. We'll do it anyway after the big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I'm not going to share our whip count. I know we saw Lou Barletta, who was a hard no, come out and say he's yes. Steve King, I believe, had been a no. He's a yes. Member by member, we're seeing tremendous support flow in our direction, and the count keeps getting stronger. For us.
I want to get a sense of how confident you are. I don't know if you want to rate a percentage on it. Like, how confident are you that the bill will pass? And if it doesn't pass, is there a plan B?
Like, no, there is no plan. I mean, there's plan A and plan A. We're going to get this done.
And so you're confident, 100% confident?
We're going to get it done. That's it, plain and simple.
Okie dokie.
Otherwise, I'll run you down with my podium. Spicy Spicerman yesterday. Chuck Todd joins us. Chuck will talk to Governor Jerry Brown this afternoon from California. You'll see that on Meet the Press on Sunday. Chuck, hi.
Good morning.
I want to get to you on whether or not Devin Nunes' sobriety test has come back yet. But in the meantime, what is the chance that this vote goes, and what's the chance that it passes?
Well, it depends on if they can make a political argument work. I mean, right now they're not making a policy. If this is a policy argument, they lose. But the compelling argument they're making to members is this. There's a penalty for not doing anything. This not happening is a devastating loss to the party. And, oh, by the way, get this hot potato out of the House, hand it over to the Senate, and let the focus be on them. And you can live another day.
So the whole point was to have a political story to tell. The whole point is to have a political story to tell. We said we'd repeal and replace. Right. We did.
And as a political argument, I think they can make a compelling argument that maybe gets them over the finish line here. But I have no friggin' clue how this thing gets through the Senate. Because the farther they move it to the right, you know, they're going to lose the Jeff Flakes, the John McCain's, the Rob Portman's. You know, I'm not just talking about Susan Collins. Some of the known moderates of the Senate. I'm talking about, you know, some mainstream sort of conservatives, like a Rob Portman, who are not going to be comfortable with some of the massive changes. And I have to tell you, the irony is every criticism Republicans leveled at Democrats, many of them correct criticisms of right. how Democrats slammed the health care bill through.
Right.
And at times did it without, you know, getting it rescored and all these things. Republicans are doing every single one of those.
Learn nothing.
Every single one of those tactics.
The essential health benefits piece, which would on paper allow you to pay less because, let's say you're a 22-year-old male, you wouldn't be paying for pregnancy benefits is one of the mm-hmm. things on the policy. Does that change the technicality of now you need 60 votes because it's actually a change in the policy of the bill?
Well, that's what's going to be a fight here, whether that part can get through the Senate. But, you know, this is where do whatever it takes to get it passed in the House and worry about that later.
Right.
A mindset has taken over. There is a mindset that says, hey, at least if you try and then they decide that it can't be done with 50 votes, that you need to apply the filibuster threshold. Well, then at least you've sent the message that you tried. And I think that that's why they're going to try to do this in the House and get this through in the House, because it may be the only way to get the votes they need from the conservative end. Look, they've made a calculation here. There are more gettable votes on the right in the House conference than on the left. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the way it's going to work in the Senate with Senate Republicans, but I think they're making the correct calculation, at least mathematically, in the House side.
Chuck, Republicans can only afford to lose about 20 votes in the House, but what happens, what are the options, what are Trump's options if this bill fails and doesn't even get out of the House?
I just don't think they bring this to a vote if they don't know their vote count. So I think you will see a delay. I still think there's a 70 to 80% chance this passes the House, but only a 30 to 40% chance it happens today. It wouldn't shock me as they're rejiggering the bill, where you're going to have more members. So, wait a minute, let me just see what the changes will do to the Congressional Budget Office before I vote. You know, let me see what the coverage number is, and let me see what the deficit number is. You may have enough members that say that it buys them time because they secretly didn't have the votes. So I think there's still a decent chance this vote doesn't happen today. And they have plenty of legitimate ways to delay this, including what I just mentioned.
Talking to Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, and MTP Daily on MSNBC every day, 4 o'clock Chicago time and around the Midwest. Check your local listings. You know the drill. All right, so Devin Nunes, this gets a little deep in the weeds, but essentially you are the chairman of an allegedly independent committee. You get some information classified handed to you. You hold a press conference, you go to the target of the investigation, or one of the targets, before you go to your ranking member to share the information with them. And then when you do go to the ranking member, you have no paperwork. It's just a conversation. Nothing in Washington happens without knowing what the next move will be. So was this Devin Nunes running to the president without thinking this through, or does he have something else up his sleeve?
If his goal was to get this investigation out of the House, then he had something else up his sleeve. Because that's what I think essentially has done, is that he's delegitimized the investigation in the House.
Right.
He no longer has the credibility to conduct this investigation. Now, that said, maybe he gets kowtowed by Democrats. Maybe now he has to give in on subpoena power. He hadn't fully given in on agreed with Adam Schiff on who to subpoena and who to bring forward. So I'll be curious to see what the fallout from this is. Maybe he does end up feeling as if he made a mistake as he gets up this morning and sees all this criticism. But that's the only you know, if this was an intentional plan to basically blow up the House Intel investigation after what was a disastrous Monday for the president.
Right.
Well, then he succeeded in doing that. And that may be what the motive was. That may be what the chief motive was to essentially create enough doubt to essentially halt this investigation. Because guess what? It slows it down. And I think you have some in the White House that are just like, you know, the more you create confusion, the more you slow it down, maybe the more likely that it doesn't, you know, it has a harder time getting off the ground.
In his position, he sees information that we don't see. Is it possible he's seen stuff that is very damaging and he doesn't want to be the guy that is part and parcel to potentially taking down the president? I don't know how safe his district is, but he'd have to go explain that to his people.
You know, look, I think we don't want to ascribe any motive here, but he was on the Trump transition. He's always seems to be, he was dragged, kicking and screaming to do this investigation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's got a, he does not have the benefit of the doubt on partisanship here. He's got to prove that some sort of partisan loyalty here didn't trump his duties as House Intel Chair. And I think that the burden of proof is on him. It is not on everybody else.
At the very least, though, Chuck, what happens to Nunez now?
I'll be curious to see how Paul Ryan reacts because, you know, Nunez made it clear that he somehow told Paul Ryan before he told the president. But then Paul Ryan told him, did Paul Ryan advise him to go to the president before talking to the ranking member? Did Paul Ryan advise him to do any of this without having somebody else with him? You know, I think the next step is, does Paul Ryan keep him as House Intel Chair? I am, you know, today, I think in the middle of this healthcare fight, that's an explanation that Paul Ryan, I think, needs to be asked and given about.
Well, that's the thing. If I'm Paul Ryan and you come to me yesterday with this, I go, today? Today you're bringing this to me? I don't know if you heard. I'm a little busy with the healthcare thing.
Right. Well, then if you read the president's interview with Time Magazine today, which took place right after the Nunez press conference, it all feels like there's a little bit. I understand why a lot of people think this was orchestrated out of the White House, because the White House and the president are, truly embracing this new development.
Right. Last question. Rex Tillerson says, I really didn't want the job. My wife talked me into it and says he's going to skip a NATO meeting and go to Russia. In the middle of all of this, could anything be more idiotic just by way of how it looks? And what is he thinking?
I guess he has no interest in trying to boost State Department morale. State Department morale was already pretty low. It's getting lower. I think it's pretty clear he doesn't have a grasp of the job yet. That's what it strikes me, and this is what happens. Look, he came in from the outside of government. So I don't nobody expected him to understand a lot of the protocols and different things and all of that. But he has nobody around him that knows what the heck they're doing. He has not yet been able to hire anybody with any knowledge of how the State Department works, because the few people he's tried to hire got vetoed because they're on some sort of blacklist because they happen to criticize Donald Trump one. And
it's just idiotic.
So he's out there on an island, and he doesn't know what he's doing. And he's kind of flailing about on this. And again, some of this, I think he needs to realize he's in a job that he has a lot to learn. And he needs to surround himself with some people that have some experience. And right now, he has nobody with any experience helping him out. And I think it shows.
Hillary Clinton's available. She's just wandering around the woods. She should know that department pretty well.
She has some experience, I hear.
Yeah. Chuck Todd's going to talk to Jerry Brown today. The governor of California has a very interesting tale to tell about how his state has turned around and also has a lot to say about what he thinks of Trump/Ryan care. Chuck, thanks as always. We'll hear you and see you this afternoon.
Thank you, brother.
See ya. That's Chuck Todd from Meet the Press and MTP Daily. And here's Mary.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I was walking along amidst a crowd of people when suddenly I heard this enormous crash and bang. Next thing I saw a guy who I assume to be the driver of the vehicle get out and race away.
Turned around, and as we looked along the bridge, because we were only crawling along the bridge, there was bodies, literally.
Ten bodies.
The one I have seen of it is one person wasn't moving at all.
There were people on the ground the whole length of the bridge. I saw people flying in the air.
Terrorists have a clear aim. That is to create discord, distrust, and to create fear. The police stand with all communities in the UK and will take action against anybody who seeks to undermine society, especially where their crimes are motivated by hate.
Sound package there from yesterday in London, and the travesty of one lunatic changing all of those people's lives. But London will not be swayed, and London is not afraid, and our friend Paul Coit's live in London. First off, buddy, I'm glad you and all your family and everybody is okay. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, good. Yeah, we're fine. I mean, it's interesting what you say about how London is, and there's, if I can tell you one thing that was written on the, you've been on the Underground, you've been on the London Underground many times yourself, and they have signs as you walk through, and this is, people write them on every day, say what the trouble with different lines are, and this was written, and even an MP quoted this. And it pretty much sums us up. And it said on there, it said, all terrorists are politely reminded that this is London, and whatever you do to us, we will drink tea and jolly well carry on. Which is pretty much, which is great, isn't it?
It's perfect.
It sums it up, because everybody's just out there, and we'll carry on regardless, no matter what they do. Nobody's going to hide away. Nobody's going to get scared. Oh, I'm not going there. We will carry on and just carry on with our day. We'll drink tea as well.
Well, I made the point yesterday on Twitter that if you could handle the bombing of World War II, if you could handle the 7/7 attacks, one nut is not going to bring London down. But it's still, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. People just minding their own business, taking some pictures on what turned out to be a beautiful day on the Westminster Bridge, and then all hell breaks loose. So, you know, you were a tour guide in that city forever. You know every inch of London. So let's try to paint a picture there.
Yeah.
The Westminster Bridge leads directly into Parliament Square, right?
Well, that's right. Well, I mean, I can start on the other side of the bridge, which is ironic, the fact that there's a hospital there. And you know what the middle of London's like. You know, you're not likely to have a great big hospital right in the middle of the city. So, but there is St. Thomas's Hospital, which is a very old hospital.
Right.
Is right at one end of Westminster Bridge. So then you have Westminster Bridge, which leads up to Westminster and the Houses of Parliament. So it goes over the Thames there. And as you head over the bridge, on the left-hand side is the Big Tower and then Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament there to the left. And as you head over the bridge, then there's a huge square, which is Parliament Square, and that's where you'll find Westminster Abbey, and that's where the House of Parliament are. And then huge, huge railings all the way around the outside, and very large concrete blocks which have been put there over the last, I don't know, probably since 7/7. So nobody can actually drive anything through there and then get into the grounds of Parliament. So that's the way things look.
So if you think of New York City, and you've been to New York City many times, it's less so here in Chicago, but it's here as well. Bridges here, pedestrian bridges, generally have rails on either side, so people are sort of protected from wandering off into traffic more so than traffic wandering off into them. But Westminster Bridge, the reason this lunatic was able to do what he did is he was able to literally drive up on the sidewalk where the people were, right?
Yeah, because the thing is, the bridge, as far as the actual bridge is concerned, there's what, probably four lanes of traffic at the most.
Right.
So it's not a huge bridge, and it's a very, very old bridge, as most of the bridges over the Thames are. So where the road is, the street goes straight over, and there's a small pavement or sidewalk which is on either side. So there's enough room, I don't know, you could probably have three people walk alongside or on both sides.
Right.
But it would, you know, it would look strange if you then had a great big fence over this, because it's just the way bridges are here. You know, they're not great big huge things, and there's plenty of space. I mean, we've got other bridges, which are your great big bridges, which are further down the Thames, which is a different kettle of fish altogether. But with an old bridge like that, you know, it's just like walking along the pavement, and then you've got the road alongside, but it just happens to be over the river. So it's very easy, but, I mean, the likelihood of something like that happening, of course, is very, very rare. Of course, it's happened in Germany, and this seems to be in France.
What happened here at Ohio State?
Style of of course, but it's the new style of doing stuff. But it seems like it's just one man on his own. We don't have a name. We don't know too much. All we know that he was born in this country, that then took it to think, right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to mow these people down and then go running into Parliament. And the thing is, and you can only get so far once you get through those railings. If you manage to get through the railings, there's no chance that you will then get into Parliament, which is probably what he was trying to do. Now, this poor policeman was stabbed to death. He wasn't armed, because generally policemen aren't armed, although they were further in towards Parliament, which ended up stopping him. So now there's the talk of whether all police around these sort of areas should be armed, but that's a different argument that's going to go on in the future.
Sure.
A very swift response, though, Paul. They had, I think, 6 to 7 arrests just overnight, just since this happened, of people possibly connected. So, I mean, you have to say that for Scotland Yard, just a very quick response to this.
Absolutely, and then the intelligence is incredible, because there's rumours, I think it's pretty much fact, that there's been over 50 that have actually been stopped and terrorist attempts that have actually been foiled over the past 10 years.
Right.
Because the intelligence is so good. But when you deal with one person, how can you stop that?
You can't.
And then the secret is how you react to it when it happens, if you can't stop it. And in this country, we haven't been saying, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? And it really has been a question of when it's going to happen and how it's going to be, not the fact that it's not going to happen at all.
Your two beautiful kids, two of my favorite kids, they are my two favorite British children, by the way, go to school today and they hear from their friends and kids talk and they're getting older now. What do you say to them?
I tell you what I say to them. I've lived through all this for years, and it's been different 77 and then further back with the IRA back in the 70s. But what I say to them, because that's the first thing was said, is, if this is really close, is this happening? Firstly, it's happening all over the world. And the second thing, the most important thing, is that there's 9 million people live in London alone. Mm-hmm. And if you just look at the odds of, you can say that about children that are nervous about flying, about crossing the road, the chances are it will never ever happen to you.
Right.
Bad things happen, but the chances are it's not going to happen to you. So don't you worry that it will do, because it probably won't. That's what I'd say to my children. But this is what we've all got to say. It doesn't matter where we are in the world. We're going through the same thing. It can happen here. It can happen in Chicago. It could happen in Timbuktu. It doesn't matter. Anybody that fights this evil that's going on or is against it, there's a chance that they're going to be a victim to it. But it's making sure that they don't win. And that's what London is never going to allow to happen.
Your mayor, Mayor Khan, last fall did an interview and said, look, this is part of life in major cities now, and everybody's got to be alert and aware and vigilant. Donald Trump Jr., the genius, followed that up with a tweet yesterday, said, oh, my God, are you kidding? Without reading the story, without understanding the context of the story, the mayor is of Middle Eastern heritage and Muslim. What is his popularity level like? And are people, because you have so many.
Let's talk about Muslim, our best features.
Let's go ahead and turn that off. The Muslim population in London is huge. What's the mayor's popularity like now?
It's good. And I'll tell you why, because people understand that this is not the Muslim population that are doing this.
Right.
This is an extremist.
Exactly.
Muslims, they're honest, proper Muslims in this country are peaceful people, and they are as against this as the rest of us. But because you've got these terrorists that are doing it in so-called, with a Muslim, in the name of valor and in the name of Muslim, which is their own thing.
Right.
Which is not the way of this religion. And people in this country are totally aware of that, because we've got so many people of different religions, and that's the way we like it. There's different people from all over the world. It's an incredible, coming together of different people, which it always has been. So we're not, and I think generally there's never going to be a outpouring of, it's those Muslims, it's their fault, because people know it's not. It's something completely different to that, but just uses that name, and people are aware of that and against it.
Sounds like you're a little farther ahead of that argument than we are here even, but we're certainly trying to fight that fight here. Listen, I love you and your family, and I'm glad you guys are okay, and we carry on. And tell me again, the sign in the tube said what?
Remember this, all terrorists are politely reminded that this is London, and whatever you do to us, we will, no matter what you do to us, we will drink tea. And we will jolly well carry on. So don't forget it.
I love that.
It's the greatest thing I've heard. Thank you, buddy. I'll talk to you later on. It's time for traffic, and then we'll check in with Pat Brady live from a beach somewhere with his kids. But I want to ask him what he thinks this Ryan Care, Trump Care vote could be today if, in fact, it goes down.
The fact is Obamacare is a disaster. It's a little bit like President Obama. When he left, people like him. When he was here, people didn't like him so much. That's the way life goes. That's human nature.
That's from the Donald J. Trump Big Book of Philosophy. 727. Eric Edelstein's here. Eric, where do you work?
I work at AL Media.
How's things there? Pretty good?
That's good.
You still on probation?
I'm probation, but they're going to take the ankle bracelet off soon.
I like your chances.
Thanks.
Pat Brady's live from a beach somewhere. Took his kids on spring break. Where are you?
I'm in the Cayman Islands.
How was the flight?
It was great. Got done, everything good. It's not a bad place to be.
You guys didn't take the train?
No, I drove.
What's the weather today?
Kind of like it is every day, 81 and sunny.
It's amazing I even talk to you. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
All right, so people you've spoken with, people you've talked to, we're talking about 1/6 of the American economy when we get down to healthcare. And I don't know that I've ever asked you this, and this came up a little bit with Chuck. Why is Paul Ryan staking everything on this, and why has there been such a rush after all the lessons the Democrats laid out for the Republicans not to do?
Well, there is. It's a political calculation because the Republicans, particularly in the conservative districts, ran that they're going to repeal Obamacare. I think there were hundreds of repeal Obamacare votes when the president, President Obama, was still there. And what I don't agree with, and probably you don't agree with me on this, the rush. The Democrats aren't playing ball at all on any of it. Even if you try to involve them, from the people I talk to, they just are going to obstruct whatever the Republicans are trying to do. So it makes sense to get it through as quickly as you can rather than let them take pot shots at it. And it's not like this issue hasn't been discussed for decades. So the policy's there. It's nothing new. And this is how it works. If you want to get it done, you do it like this. And the Democrats did it last time. It doesn't sound good to the general public, but if the other side doesn't want to play ball, this is what you do.
Karma's a bitch, isn't it? I mean, I mean, come on. The Democrats don't want to play ball. I mean, look, that's a valiant try by my good friend Pat. A valiant try. Look, I think the answer is simple as to why Ryan's pushing it, and Pat's right. Going back to 2010, they have made this a pillar of Republican ascendancy, is repealing Obamacare. The problem was the first half of that debate was all about repeal. Then someone in the Republican caucus or Republican Party who was advising them got smart and said, if we repeal it, what
are we
going to
do next?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let's do repeal and replace.
Right.
Like, well, what are we going to replace? Well, we'll worry about that later. The problem is this is, in all seriousness, a moment that says Republicans won the White House. They've both houses of Congress. Can they govern? Can they govern? And the repeal part for Republicans is easy. It's the replacement part that's got them tripped up, because by all the independent estimates, the bill that they're putting forth would be a disaster for the very people that helped elect them.
Yeah, the Trump vote. So, Pat, don't you pay a political price next year in the midterms?
Well, as it happened in 2010, and I remember Mayor Giuliani giving the speech, if they pass Obamacare, it's bad for the country, but it's great for the party. So, yeah, there's going to be a political price to pay for this. But anyway, Thurman, you mentioned it when you were talking to Chuck, Steve. I didn't realize getting rid of some essential requirement in healthcare that people like you and me, you know, pushing 56, have to have pregnancy insurance is a conservative idea. How about just common sense?
Yeah, no, I think it works. I think it works completely on paper. The problem is you turn that over to the insurance companies, not all bad people, but you turn it over to the insurance companies to say you can now a la carte price it as opposed to having a certain list of benefits that have to be in. And they could say, well, if you don't want that, but you really want this, then our actuaries are going to assume that you're going to put a claim in on this, so your price is going to be higher.
Well, then that's to my philosophical disagreement with Obamacare, whether the goal of getting people insured we all would like to see. But government meddling in one-sixth of our economy, the government never does anything efficiently or effectively. It just ends up costing a lot more. And I think the Republican market-based approach and the ideas that we put forward for years, I think, are better policy.
So do you believe the vote will happen today? I mean, he's got to do a whip count. He's got to make sure that he's got that 20-vote margin that Andrea spoke about earlier. Put a percentage on it. What's the chance they're going to do a vote by tonight?
50-50. I really think it's a coin flip that people have talked to and this analysis I've seen, 50-50. I agree with what Chuck Todd said, that they won't call it unless they have the votes, but I'm not sure this thing may go on for a while.
And what do you think Paul Ryan said when Devin Nunes came in yesterday in the middle of all of this and said, hey, I got to tell you something?
A couple things on that. Devin, in these investigations done by people that have never done investigations, and the fact that he went to the White House like that, there's no credibility with this investigation. It's over. Maybe he did want to pitch it and get it out of the House. But now, because of Trump's tweet, if he had not sent this tweet out, we would not have had the FBI director talking about all this. All this is supposed to be behind closed doors to protect both the innocent and the guilty. Now we're going to have some big investigation. Yesterday, it was mind-bogglingly stupid to watch that from people that are supposed to know what they're doing.
Hard to argue with any of that. All right, enjoy your time. We'll call you every hour on the hour just to make sure you're having fun.
I'm going to have a lot of fun. I'll see you next week. Thanks.
sound like a guy's going to start screening his calls. I want to ask Eric Edelstein about Obamacare. What went wrong? Did the states meddle in the infrastructure to help take it down and create this sort of caving in upon itself? And what's the Democrats' role to play in all of this as we go forward? So we'll get into that with Eric in a second. Let's get to the big story next on 720 WGN.
This doesn't divide Republicans. This brings us together, and that is complete repeal, clean repeal. As Congressman Jordan said, we voted on this last year, and every Republican voted for it. That's what we should do again. But we are divided. We have to admit we are divided on replacement. We are united on repeal, but we are divided on replacement.
Senator Rand Paul, if the vote goes today, as has been stated by many this morning, it's highly questionable that the bill will look anything like it looks once it leaves the House, once it leaves the Senate, and then goes into committee, and then everybody involved goes, what bill? I didn't see any bill. What bill are you talking about? All right, so let's back this up. Obamacare. The Democrats made a lot of mistakes, and the Democrats largely have admitted these mistakes, you know, rushing it, things of that nature. I think we all agree now, and there's a lot of Republicans that agree now, that there's a lot of good things in that bill that have been beneficial. Now, I can tell you from a personal standpoint, I don't know about you guys, but the insurance I have now, I pay more for, and I have less coverage. That's just the nature of the beast. There's a lot of people who are getting coverage they didn't have before and a lot of people who have better coverage. So it's a flawed bill, and it was a bill that needs to be fixed. But I keep hearing again and again, states messed around with this. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these Republican legislators in particular, and that helped Obamacare cave in. Is that true?
Yeah, with an assist from the Supreme Court. And let me see if I can walk through this in a way that's coherent.
Keep in mind you're talking to me, so make it easy.
Yeah, so there were a lot of provisions of Obamacare, but in the most basic terms, there were three major provisions. One was it mandated that Americans had to have health care.
Right.
Two was it created these state risk pools. In other words, if each state could set up an exchange so people could buy insurance. But the third was it greatly expanded Medicaid, which meant that people that couldn't afford anything would have a much better opportunity to have health care. Now, what happened was Republicans go to court, right? They challenge the constitutionality of ACA. It goes to the Supreme Court. In that famous opinion, Justice Roberts casts the deciding vote and says, no, Obamacare, ACA is constitutional. But the provision they struck down said that you can't mandate that the states all expand Medicaid. It's up to each state, right? So what happened now is the Republican states, the red states, went around, and a lot of them said, we don't want to expand Medicaid. We're not doing that. So 31 states across the country expanded Medicaid. 19 states did not. And all the data has shown that in the 31 states that expanded it, people's cost of coverage went down, more people were covered, more poor people had coverage. And so it's a long way of saying there were mistakes that Democrats made, and certainly in rolling out the bill, there were many good things. But when that provision was struck down and it basically said we can now make this a political football in the states, a lot of those state governors, red states, and the congressional delegation said, well, ho, we can starve this thing, because if you don't have these risk pools of healthy people, all you're going to end up with is poor people and sick people, and that makes rates go up.
Okay, so the Republicans are all, according to the bite we just heard, they're all in agreement that it needs to be replaced, repealed. Fine. What now, I guess, those people who are going to lose coverage, what is their next step?
Well, their next step has got to be to hope that this does not succeed, as long as they aren't repealing this, and as long as it doesn't pass the House and Senate and have the president sign it, ACA is still in effect, which means insurance companies can't take away someone because they have a pre-existing condition, which means kids who are up to 26 can remain on their parents' plan. So as long as that's not repealed, everybody's still covered. But there's this sense of anxiety, right, that what happens when they do it. And I think the Republicans have realized they cannot just repeal it.
Right, because
that's
going to
be chaos.
If it does go through, which I don't think it will, but if it does go through and they say, yes, repeal, did they lose coverage immediately, or is this kind of a gradual weaning off process?
Well, according to this bill, I think it's a gradual weaning. But okay, the problem is what you're weaning to. And right, what you're weaning to, by the Congressional Budget Office, says, well, in the first year, 14 million people are going to lose health care. Over 10 years, 25 million people are going to lose health care. So the notion that this actually replaces it, it creates a worse system, and it may put us in a situation. Let's remember, Obamacare, ACA, came into being because something had to be done. We had 15% of the population, millions of people, who had no access to health care, which meant the rest of us were paying more.
And yeah, that's the thing. The initial reason was to try to control skyrocketing health care costs, because you had people, right, wandering into emergency rooms.
That's right.
And hospitals were paying, and everything
care
went up.
Right. Now, the fact of the matter is, despite all the flaws, despite all the complexity of what we said, yes, rates have inched up partly because of what we said, but they've had the lowest growth in 25 years of healthcare costs. Healthcare costs have been going up repeatedly year after year after year. The ACA, there's no question, has helped stem that growth. It's still growing, but not as much. And more importantly, you know, 20 or 25 million Americans have healthcare who didn't have it before.
So Democrats, in a discussion of politics, which is what we do Thursdays, the Democrats, when they had control, through cockiness, believing they'd always have control, miss an opportunity to tweak this themselves?
Well, they missed two opportunities, I would say. They missed the opportunity to tweak it and make it better. But more importantly, I think the rollout was a disaster. The websites weren't up. The state exchanges weren't created. It caused a lot of chaos. And as we all know, first impressions last. And so there was they created this huge opening for the Republicans, whose main argument, like Pat said, was the government can't run anything.
Right.
And so you come out with this massive program and your websites don't work. It reinforces the Republican message that government can't run anything. Now, the fact is, government can run some things. They put a man on the moon. We won world wars. Medicare is maybe one of the great programs that kept seniors out of poverty. So there are things
like, if you'd like no government, go to Venezuela.
Right, right. See how that's working for you. The fact of the matter is, because it's 1/6 of GDP, it is such a huge part of our economy and a part of our lives, it has to be a mix of private sector and government. And the notion that ACA is a government takeover of your health care, it's just not true. It's Republican talking points. But something needs to be done, because there's a lot of chaos and a lot of fear right now. And we can't – why would we go to a system that's worse than what we had on the problem initially when we passed ACA?
Isn't this incredibly short-sighted? And again, the lessons learned by Democrats who just – we're now in the weakest position the Democratic Party's been in forever – because how do the Republicans not lose control in 2018 if this turns out to cave in as fast as it could if it passes today and somehow gets
right
out of the Senate?
Well, this is the problem when you're in the minority. You know, we always say this, you know, it's easy to throw bombs when you have no actual responsibility for governing. And so this notion of repeal, and they cast hundreds and hundreds of votes, and they promised their constituents, and they ran tens of millions of dollars of ads saying they're going to do it, and now they feel sort of stuck that they've got to do this for their base. But they're in charge now. And as I said earlier, this is a – put aside the politics for a second. They're in charge of the government. They own it. And are they capable of being adults and being able to run this country. And, you know, we've seen how the White House handles that. And now we're going to see, is Congress any better, or are they just playing politics?
So are we going to see, what if the, again, if it passes, which I don't think it will, if it passes, how soon will the rest of us see lower deductibles, lower premiums, prescription drug costs going down?
I think that's hard to say.
It's very hard to say because complex. But one person did say, like, even if you take the replacement plan on its merits and you give it all the projections, and yes, deductibles go down and premiums go down, mm-hmm. but coverage is a lot worse. Less people have it, and the people who do have it have less care. So yes, you could create a healthcare system that people pay less for, but you know how you could pay less? Don't have healthcare. But
right.
Yeah, everyone's going to be sicker, and we're ultimately going to pay the price.
And everybody assumes that it is a mandatory thing that you're going to get health insurance. It's not. Never has been, and it's not. No employer has to offer you health insurance. It's a competitive benefit. We come back. I got a couple more questions for you on this as we continue. Got a lot of texts from people who are saying if men don't want to pay for pregnancy care, they may have forgotten the fact that they're 50% of the reason I need it. And some additional people that said, I guess we're dropping Cialis, Viagra, and Levitra as well. Those are both good arguments.
And in fact, one of the provisions that we didn't talk about in ACA was equalizing payments. And what had happened before ACA was that women had to pay a lot more for health care
right.
than men for a lot of the reasons you're saying. Because, again, it's risk pool. If more people are in the pool to cover more things, it's cheaper for everyone.
Right.
If we start to say only women have to get coverage for pregnancy or mammograms or any of that stuff.
It's the only reason car insurance works.
That's
the only reason insurance for your house works.
Right. So the notion that women alone should do that, the notion that women shouldn't have mammograms or any of that stuff tested, but men can get Viagra. I mean, a lot of that stuff was thrown out in ACA, and the Republicans, this bill, whether intentionally or not, would go back to some of that inequity. It's just wrong.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, up until, I want to say 10 years ago, women were paying for mammograms.
That's right.
I mean, companies were not mandated, and I know health insurance isn't mandatory, but, you know, if you have health insurance, mammograms should be paid for.
Right. But if you looked at average pricing in age groups and demographics and income groups, women against men were paying more, bottom line, for their premiums because they had to cover pregnancies mm-hmm. and all that. The notion that women alone are responsible for covering pregnancies, that's absurd. It's almost un-American. I mean, it's ridiculous.
One of the things that's frightening for a lot of people, and I think completely wrong with both of the projected bills that the Republicans have considered, is this dropping of mental health care. We've never been more aware of the need for mental health care in this country. It's very expensive for insurance companies, and insurance companies are given the opportunity to drop it. In a lot of cases, they will. This is why the a la carte model probably doesn't work.
Well, it's dropping the mental health care, and then depending on where you put substance abuse with the opioid epidemic,
it would all fall under that.
It would all fall under that, and you know, you're talking about tens of millions of people who are going to lose coverage. Say, look.
And we're going to pay for that down the road.
I don't want to be melodramatic, but people will die. I mean,
that's true.
The fact of the matter
is true.
You play politics with this kind of issue. Yes, you have a flawed bill. It needs adjustment. It should be changed. If we were in a more bipartisan era, that could happen. But the fact of the matter is if they proceed with this, there will be people who are going to get sicker, and there will be people who will lose coverage and die.
This all... could have been headed off even in January or February if the president of the United States had stood up and said, I'm well aware that I promised you repeal and replace. I'm new. I just found out this is a lot tougher than it looks. We need more time. We need more time to get it done.
Well, he did stand up and say nobody knew how complicated
it is. Yeah, that wasn't the right statement. Where do you work, Eric?
I work at AL Media.
All right, the official AL Media, the Steve Cochran Show. Stand by. Andre's going to cover a few entertainment stories. And, Eric, you may want to have the radio on wherever you're running around this morning because the audience loves when I read to them. There is a cover story in the New Time magazine that Chuck Todd mentioned. I'm going to read a little bit of the Donald Trump interview unedited to you. And the first person that can make sense of it will win a Lou Malnati's pizza. Hey, it's 8 o'clock. The news is next. It's 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
813, how you doing? Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
How you doing, Steve?
Why don't we dance? Dave's got the moves, like Jagger. What you got to say? Not Mick Jagger, Mick's grandmother.
Really?
8:13. Remember this, Coolin' Again?
Doing the overbite.
This gets white people up at weddings. Steve, are you a wedding dancer?
I am a wedding dancer, yes.
Doesn't make it right.
Yeah. What a sight to see.
All right, so we get some show business stories here from Andrea. Dean's out this week on vacation or something. I think he's with Pat Brady and the Caymans.
I think he is.
All right, story number one.
All right, well, first of all, happy National Puppy Day. That's
what?
For you, Steve Grzanich, and I know you're a big puppy fan, Steve,
dogs.
And Dave as well. So happy National Puppy Day. All right, first of all, Brad and Angelina are talking again.
Well, they should. They have to co-parent.
They had a very contentious initial split. Remember, she called DCFS. He had to go through these parenting classes and have all these interviews. But they are talking again. It's been 2 months since they hired a private judge now to deal with their divorce and custody issues. They're closer to reaching a resolution. They say that they are communicating again, and they should have all of their issues resolved as far as the divorce goes and specifics of custody and whatnot by summer.
Brad Pitt has a certain track record for dating the most beautiful women in the world. You know, he dumped Jennifer Aniston for Angelina.
Mm-hmm.
So who's next?
Boy.
Because
he's
52 or 3.
He is.
Something like that? Let's say, you know, it's half your age
53.
Plus. It's half your age plus 7, plus we'll round it down because he's Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Who is the most beautiful woman in the world over 30?
You know what? I always saw Brad Pitt.
Jake just said Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say Scarlett Johansson or maybe Kate Hudson, but Johansson's a little younger. Yeah, I could see that.
I like Kate Hudson, but I'm not a Kate Hudson's knockout. Beautiful.
How about Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, she's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got to quit calling me. Next!
Next one. Beauty and the Beast. Well, it looks like this tale as old as time is standing the test of time. It's been less than a week, only 5 days, and the live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast surpassed the box office sales, the entire sale of the 1991 movie. Yeah.
Wow.
So excited.
Five days.
You're going when? I think I'm going tomorrow. Yes.
You bringing your MyPillow and take a little nap in the theater?
No, I won't be napping during
Who are you bringing
Beauty
with you?
And the Beast. I'm making Steve go with me.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah, that'll be nice. Now, $219
million. Tale as old as time.
Which means it's a record breaker for another reason.
Can we go home right now?
It's only the fifth. How about this? Only the fifth film in history to earn more than $200 million domestically in 5 days.
That's pretty impressive.
Even with all the Marvel comic movies, I thought that would be
that's a lot of money.
It's
a lot of money.
Okay, and I know this is going to make all of you very sad. Kristen Cavallari, Jay Cutler. The Cutlers are on the move.
Where are they going?
Chicago. They're moving to Nashville. She was Instagramming and tweeting pictures of herself at various locations.
Why Nashville?
Throughout the West Loop.
They already have a house there. He went to Vandy.
Yeah. I knew that, but I didn't know they had a house there.
Full-time, they're going
there.
They
got married there. Not that I know too much about their life.
She said she's excited to leave. She's sad to leave Chicago, but excited for their next
adventure. Are they moving there, and do they have the house there because Spike Odell's there?
I don't know.
All right, thanks.
One more for you two. This is just such a feel-good, nice story. Beyonce. Did you guys hear what Beyonce did with this little girl?
No, but I'm sure it was fantastic.
Well, she made one cancer patient's dream come true. There was a campaign that they started. This little girl loves Beyonce. She lives in Houston. Her name's Ebony Banks. And Beyonce FaceTimed her.
Well, that's sweet.
How cool is that?
It's nice.
Said, I love you.
You know who does that kind of stuff all the time? Taylor Swift.
She does. Yeah, remember she did it for Emily Beasley, who I interviewed her parents last weekend, and they said, oh my gosh, you have no idea, Taylor Swift, when she reached out to them, and then did another follow-up phone call.
Just to help for a day.
Yeah, I mean, how cool is that? So Ebony Banks got a little FaceTime with Beyonce there, so Beyonce's doing her good deed for the year.
You guys like George Clooney?
Yeah.
Of course.
Did you hear the Clooney story?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a birthday?
Birthday. Oh, so there's an 87-year-old woman who's having a birthday at a London old folks home. George and Amal Clooney, they have a place in London. They have a place at Lake Como in Italy. They have a place in Los Angeles. I have the same issues. So they're at their place in London, and the people at the nursing home know that the Clooneys live down the street. Well, this 87-year-old woman says all she wants for her birthday is George Clooney. So they somehow get a message to George Clooney, who shows up unannounced by himself with flowers.
How sweet is that?
And he spends 15 or 20 minutes with her and gives her a kiss and makes her day. And then she did an interview with, I don't know, a bunch of news folks. But one of the things she said was, somebody said, well, what do you want next year for your birthday? And she holds up the picture. More, George.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Brad Pitt or somebody else.
No, Matt Damon. Moving through the Ocean's 13 cast.
Exactly.
And then he can bring his twins in to see her, too.
When are they going to be born?
June, right? Isn't it their due date?
Is it later than that?
I don't know. I was talking to Amal. I said, good, you look beautiful. You're barely showing.
Well, she's so tall. Beyonce. Both of them.
She's glowing.
Twins. So cute.
I think I'm having a reaction to the meds. It's 8:18. When we come back, I have for you, the regular I'll read to you feature. I'm going to read you a couple of excerpts from the Trump interview. And Dave, you got a Hawkopedia ready for us?
I do, Steve.
We'll get to both of those.
By the way, wait, I know you're on edge. Amal is due in June.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know you're Stefan. Put
that on the calendar, yeah.
What do you think they'll name the babies?
Steve and Dave?
Yeah. Right. Are they boys?
I don't know.
Do they know?
They don't know. They want to be surprised.
They're not going to be like crazy Hollywood names like Grape Nuts and Cheerios or something, are they?
Apple.
I doubt it. I'm
trying to think of the name of his pig.
He had that pig.
Oh, he had that pet pig.
Yeah. I don't know that Amal's going to want him to name the baby after the pig that he had.
Yeah. I know that Kristen Cavallari named her daughter Sailor because somebody she saw had a dog named Sailor and she thought it was cute.
Oh, God. Max is the
You
pig.
Know way too much about
Good
her.
Good luck on the way to Nashville.
I do. I love Kristen Cavallari. Just so.
Good for you and Kristen.
What has she done lately?
It's 8:19.
She actually just started a new jewelry line, Emerald
Dove.
Oh,
boy.
Me too.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Bing, bing. I love it. I love it. I'm sitting there tweeting. Bing, bing, bing. You press a button. Bing, bing. They all hand you checks. Bing, 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 bing. We had our beautiful Marine standing there. Bing, 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 bing. You know, in the old days, bing, bong. You know, with a map. Bing, bing, bing. Little mouth on him. Bing, bing, bing. Bing, 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 bing. Bing, bing, bing. They're cleaning up.
Fix it up. Bing, bing, bing.
A 14-point plan. Bing, bing, bing. Anthony Weiner. You know, the little bing, bing, bing. Everyone's attacked me. Has gone. Bing. Everyone else. Bing. Where have they gone? Bing. Wow. What a tackle. Bing. Like a rocket ship, except in the wrong direction.
There are no words. Oh, wait, there are. Cover story for the new Time magazine coming up. Yesterday, Time Washington Bureau Chief Michael Scherer sat down with President Trump right at the same time that Devin Nunes was doing his news conference. So,
his tattling?
Yeah, running to mom. The focus of the story is the way Trump handles the truth and falsehoods in his career. So the writer says, do you want me to give you a quick overview of the story? I promise you, I'm not changing a word of Trump's answers, okay? The president says, yeah, it's a cool story. I mean, if the concept is right. I predicted a lot of things, Michael. Some things that came to you a little bit later. But, you know, we just rolled out a list. Sweden, I make a statement. Everybody goes crazy. The next day, they have a massive riot. Death. Uma and Anthony. You know, I tweeted about that whole deal. And then it turned out we had it. All of Hillary's email on his thing. NATO, his obsolete. Thing. Because it doesn't cover terrorism. They fixed that. And the allies must pay. Nobody knew they weren't paying. I did. I figured it. Brexit. I was totally right about that. You were over there, I think, when I predicted that right the day before. Brussels. I said, Brussels is not Brussels. I mean many things. The election's rigged against Bernie Sanders. We have a lot of things. Didn't change a word. The writer says, there's other things you've said that haven't panned out. The peg for this story in the wiretapping hearing on Monday about your tweets. Trump says, well, if you look at, in fact, I give you a front page story. And just today, I heard this just a while ago, that Devin Nunes had a news conference. Did you hear about this? They have a lot of information on tapping. Did you hear about that? The writer says, I have not. No. Trump continues. Now, remember this. When I said wiretapping, it was in quotes. Because wiretapping, you know, today is different than wiretapping. It's just a good description. Wiretapping was in quotes. What I'm talking about is surveillance. And today, Devin Nunes had a news conference. Now, probably it'll get obliterated by what's happened in London, but he just had a news conference. And here it is, one of those things. The other one, election. I said we're going to win, and we won. And many other things. I think this is going to be very interesting. Didn't change a word. Not a word. Not a single word.
Not even when talking about Anthony Weiner's thing?
Michael, the writer, says, is there anything different about making kinds of predictions without having factual evidence as president? President Trump says, I'm a very instinctual person, but my instinct turns out to be right all of the time. When everyone said I wasn't going to win the election, I said, well, I think I will. You know, it's interesting. Somebody came up to me and said the other day, gee whiz, the New York Times and other people, you know, other groups, had you down at 1%. Well, I said, no, I think I'm going to win. And people smiled. George Stephanopoulos laughed. You remember? He thought it was very cute and very funny. Other people smiled. And some people, the smart people or the people that know me, didn't laugh at all. There are people that know me, like Carl Icahn and many others. They didn't laugh. They thought I was going to win. They understand how. They understand me. But you take a look at, guess what? I won. I won easily. I predicted Brexit. Remember they said there was no way to get to 270? Well, I ended up at 306. I had election night, 306, but there's no way to get to. In fact, I went to Maine four times. Four times I went to Maine because I had to get one vote because there was no way to get to 270, but I ended up getting 306. Brexit, I predicted Brexit. You remember that? The day before the event, I said Brexit's going to happen. Everybody laughed and Brexit happened. Many, many things. They turn out to be right. And now today, Devin Nunes had a news conference. Didn't change a word. Time Magazine, cover story. I know how you like when I read to you.
Deep breaths.
That was Mike Jacobson on piano. Nicely done there,
beautiful.
Too. 8:29. Let's switch subjects here, shall we? And talk a little Hawks ahead of Coach Q in a few minutes.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I'm going home, and when I want to go home, I'm going mobile. Well, I'm going to find a home, and we'll see how it feels going mobile. Keep me moving.
The Who for Coach Q, sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. Coach Kuhl will join us in just a second. Did you guys see the Ryan Hartman, Scott Darling drop by the kids in the backyard?
Yeah, I did.
It's
tremendous. And not only in the backyard, but also like in the family room.
Yes.
It's
just dropping
great.
By. Hey, you guys got room for two more?
You don't.
Yeah, we do.
You don't need ice.
The Hawks do such a great job of that. As Coach Q joins us now. Coach, I know you were tied up there for a second. You missed your Who song, so let's roll it again for Coach. Tell me when you're ready, Mike. Coach likes to hear the Who, even if it's just in small pieces. Coach, this is for you.
I'm going home, and when I want to go home, I'm going mobile.
There you go, Coach. I just wanted you to get a little bit of the Who.
There you go.
So, it's a good way to start the day, right?
Sure.
Or end the day, or any part of the day. Hottest team in hockey still. You know, you'd do my heart good if you'd spread some of the goal scoring out a little bit. Can we figure that part out?
Yeah, it's been a real good balance this year. You know, you've got a number of guys reach a 20 goal plateau, which is a big feat in itself, especially you know, how hard scoring is now in the game. And you know, we've got some guys this year that, no matter, you know, you got Hartsey that's getting close with 18, so hopefully he can get the 20 goal mark as well. So it's balanced, and we're getting some production across the board, and it's always good to see.
What's with the 3 and 4 goal third period outbursts? It's nice to have in your pocket, but you can't always count on it, obviously.
No, don't think that's the right recipe for success. And, you know, the last couple of games against teams that, you know, we got another team tonight that's looking like they're going to be, they want to be spoilers. And, you know, they're playing hard and they're playing simple. You know, they're looking to, not just upset you. They're having fun when they're playing. So it's a kind of approach we want to have tonight that let's not think that we're a 20-minute team or a third period team, although it's a good thing to find out that we can come back in games. But it's hard to do in our league. You look at all the teams' records with leads going into the third periods, and not too many teams have even given up the lead. So it's a don't expect that recipe to work. The nice thing is we have gotten rolling late in games. Our last game, I didn't mind the way we were playing, but we dug ourselves a gigantic hole down 4-1 and getting a point and, you know, had a chance to get the other one. So it's a, you know, there's some good things going on at the same time. And I don't think we gave up much against, and that's usually how we measure our team anyways, what we're giving up in a chance department against us.
You address the team between periods on a regular basis, or is it only when you really feel like I got to get the team together and tell them all something?
No, we always go in there before we go out for periods, and you know, at the end of the game, you know, we don't address them after games, and we'll visit that in the morning or the next day.
But in between periods, is it adjustment stuff, generally speaking?
Yeah, we always give them three things to be aware of, what we're looking to do, whether it's an adjustment or things that we can look to apply or be aware of what they're up to. And we'll go over a couple of ideas, PK or power play-wise as well. So it's a, you know, it's our guys, and usually on the bench, you know, just kind of rehashing some of the same things that we'll be saying on the bench during the middle of a period.
Can you tell which guys aren't listening? Like if you look around the dressing room,
like,
can you
like all of them?
Well, I know any great coach has great teacher in him, right? So it's like a teacher in front of a class, and there's always one kid who you're pretending to pay attention. You know they're not.
You know, say there's one or two. I don't know. There's, you know, everybody. You know, there's always something going on at the same time. But we like to think that they're listening and. You know, it's not like it's really sophisticated stuff we're telling them. So some guys, they're in tune, and it's very short message as well.
And Panarin can always pretend he doesn't understand
right,
the language.
Right.
Dave, say hi to Coach.
Good at it.
So I want to ask you about one of your veterans, John Hayden. He's got a whopping four games under his belt. Did you expect him to have the kind of impact he's had this quickly?
I don't know about I expected him to have it, but we certainly are very happy with the way he's taken advantage of an opportunity to play up with Taser. And I like the energy that he's brought to our team. I like his physicality. I like his purpose. You know, he comes ready to play. And, you know, I like that intensity that in a short amount of time, he looks like he's been around for a while. I know he's been to development camps, but, you know, he did a nice job at the college level at Yale. And, you know, I think he's one of those guys that got good leadership qualities to his game as well. But he's certainly, you know, I know certain guys come in and they are a little respectful and they're waiting, you know, and they pick their spots. But I like the way he's come in here and, you know, he's looking to take advantage of a great spot and a great opportunity.
Yeah, he's willing to go to the net, as you say, physical guy. I want to ask you about the story that came out the other day, and this has kind of been an ongoing story about the Olympics. I don't know if this is something that you've spent a lot of time thinking about, but it sounds like, based on what the commissioner is saying, that the NHL won't be sending players to the Olympics next year. Is that something that you think you and fellow coaches would be in favor of, staying away from sending players next year?
We'll do whatever the league wants us to do and be respectful for that. So it's a we'll see what happens. You know, there's still time there. And either way, you know, we'll do what's best for the game.
It's a great honor. But in this case, in South Korea, it's multiple time zones away and a lot of adjustment involved. So, you know, it'd be okay with me if the guys could just have a little bit of time off as opposed to making it happen that way. Just so, well, you know, in case you're wondering about my vote, Coach.
If it's time off, it'd be, you know, we wouldn't have time off. We'd be playing, so.
Well, I mean, a day or two here as opposed to going over there.
Oh, there you go.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's been this hot topic recently in the NBA with teams setting their stars down and sitting them for a game here or there, resting their stars. It doesn't seem to happen in the National Hockey League. Any ideas? That's something that's even ever been discussed or thought about with your guys?
With our team, yes, we give it some consideration the last game or two, knowing that you know, you want to make sure that everybody's fresh and everybody's healthy as best you can. But we don't give it consideration to the very end. But it's game 82, and you hope you got that privilege to make that decision, or 81, and look at it like that. And we're in a position now where we want to finish as high up as we can. But at the same time, if there's a chance to back off on your top guys in the ice time department, is something you look at. But we want to make sure that and you do have that luxury of saying a guy's not 100%. You might say, hey, let's give it a rest and make sure you're get back to being full ready and ready to go. So that's a it's a situation where, you know, you got a little bit of leeway to measure that. But as far as the rest, just because it's that time of year, you know, with days off and stuff like that, we try to apply it there. And then game 82 or 81, we'll see.
It's a totally different mindset.
Oh, it's a couple of years. Hockey players are different.
Yep.
They want to work.
Yep.
They want to work. Not knocking NBA guys. It's just a different mindset. Coach, I have a great honor for you today. Mary Sandberg, the executive producer of the show, is going to ask a question. And she, other than you, is the most intimidating person in Chicago. So Mary, say hi to Coach.
Hey, Coach. I have to keep these guys in line, so they think I'm a little bit strict and scary, but that's what I do.
Playing hard. That's all we're doing.
So I have a question. When you guys send a player down, do you say, like, let's say that the player's name is Patrick. Do you say, hey, Patrick, you need to work on getting your stick on the ice? And then when he's down there, do you have people communicating back that say, hey, he's getting really good at keeping his stick on the ice, so you can bring him back up now?
We always will tell the player the situation, and when we tell him, some guys are definitely, it's always a disappointing news when they got to come in and see whether it's me and the player, or me and Stan and the player, and we'll go over what we want him to do and what's the plan. And you know, but we have multiple people watching the games, giving us input on how they're playing and how they're performing and where they're at. And then when we make the decision on what we need based on our needs, you know, that player that's deserving of coming up usually gets the call. And we've got a couple guys that have been up and down this year that, you know, it's been a productive experience. I've had, you look at Schmaltzy, how well he's handled being here and then going down and then going another step when he came back. So it's been nice to see his progression. And we got a couple guys, three guys down there that were here this year that are playing more. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out with those guys as we're going along. But I think organizationally, those guys will be in the plans. And nice to have depth the way we do. And But we definitely get some input and got a pretty good appreciation for the progression down there and knowing that they're deserving of it when they do get the call to come back.
Yeah, and keeping your stick on ice is a big deal. And Sandberg, I'm going to go way out on a limb here and think that this is something you're going to play for Patrick Jr.
Yes.
About not keeping his stick on the ice. And if Coach Q wants you to have his stick on the ice, you better have your stick on the ice. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. My stepson.
Can't believe you used Coach Q.
The whole time we watch his games. Now, I will say Patrick's team just won the championship. He's a squirt player.
Right.
Yeah,
all
so
right.
Last weekend. So it's very exciting. But Pat, the whole time we're watching the game, get your stick on the ice. Get your stick on
but
the ice.
Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves anyway. So that's good that you came up with the stick on the ice. You always got to have your stick.
And that's Pat Boyle.
And no pucks allowed to go through you.
There you go.
That's exactly. Yeah,
or past you. There you go.
This is all going to be played back for Junior later today. Coach, Dallas tonight and Florida Friday night, but let's go with the Stars for now. Who are we going to be watching for on their side to keep in check?
Well, you got the Seguin-Benn combination. That's usually very dangerous, although they're on different lines tonight. We'll see how, you know, they usually get together on the power play. Sharpie coming to town. He'll be excited about that. And, you know, they're coming off a couple exciting games for themselves. They've, you know, they're playing like they got four lines. They got a little balance. They're playing hard. Look like they got a real check mentality right now in their game. They usually have a team that loves this. Play an offensive type game and attack, and it's been a little tighter there, so we'll see how they play tonight.
Four more on the road before you come home, and then get a few here. So have fun tonight, and thanks for the time as always.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you, thank you.
That's Coach Q.
I just feel bad. Poor Patrick. He's got
to see Sandberg,
right?
Sandberg sitting down with Patrick Jr. tonight,
right,
going, listen, I have something to play for you about keeping your stick on the ice. See if you recognize this voice.
And it's funny, I hope that Q actually sets with him, because the one time when we had Adam Burrish in, I asked, at what age do they start tying their own skates and carrying their own bag? And Adam said, what's his name? And I said, Patrick. And he said, and Patrick was in the car, and Adam said, Patrick, you are 9 years old. You should be tying your own skates and carrying your own bag.
Wow.
And then
and
Pat
did?
Said in the car, no. Pat's like, Patrick said, well, maybe Mary won't do it anymore for me, but I know you still will, Dad.
Oh,
the kid's a little con artist.
The Blackhawks!
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents...
Talk.
Chicago.
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Sponsored by the official deodorizer of the Chicago Blackhawks, known as
Fresh Wave.
That's right. And remember their slogan, if it stinks, we got you covered.
That's not really their slogan.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
What are you teaching us?
Goaltender interference. It's an infraction which popped up twice in the Blackhawks' loss Tuesday night to Vancouver, so it seemed like a good time to revisit it. Basically, interference with the goaltender has been an ongoing issue in the NHL. Contact with the goaltender by an attacking player is not automatically ruled interference. There are mitigating factors such as where the contact takes place. Is it outside the goal crease? And was the contact intentional or deliberate? That's the way it's phrased in the rule book. I'm not sure there's a big difference between intentional and deliberate.
Yeah.
But that's how
intentional
they phrase
or
it.
Deliberate would be interference.
You would think so.
Yeah.
You would think so. Just because there's contact with the goaltender does not mean interference has occurred or a goal will be disallowed. Also, it can be just the stick which causes the interference. Basically, if an attacking player enters the crease and prevents the goaltender from being able to move freely and defend his goal, and a goal is scored, it'll be disallowed. If the goaltender's teammate pushes an attacking player into him, that will not be interference. But if a guy on the same team as the goaltender is pushed into him by an attacking player, that can't be called interference. Teams may use a coach's challenge to review goals when they maintain there was interference with the goaltender or when a goal is waved off because of interference. A little bit like holding in football or foul in basketball likely occurs more often than it's called.
The thing is, if you're a goalie in the National Hockey League, here's your job. People are going to shoot hard rubber discs at you that are frozen so they slide better. Mm-hmm. They're going to shoot those at you at incredibly high rates of speed. While they do that, someone from the opposing team is going to stick their giant man butt in your face for the majority of the time.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is find the hard rubber disc before it hits you in the face.
Right.
Huh? Who wants that job? Anyone?
And how about, I mean, it's coming at you. You've got not only the player who maybe
has, could be your guy.
It could be your guy. Whoever's trying to screen you.
Yeah.
Your own guy.
Yeah.
And then who knows what else.
You wonder why goalies get paid what they do? They're worth more.
I've said this before, Steve. There's three jobs. Why would anyone want one? Goaltender in the National Hockey League, relief pitcher in baseball, or kicker in football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Yeah. You're expected to perform at the highest level.
Right. And if you don't, then...
You hear about
forget
it.
All I got out of that, keep your stick on the ice.
Okay. And that's our Hawkopedia for
seems
today.
Right. That seems right. Look kind of casually at Sandberg. Is she upset? She's not coming this way, is she?
Not looking over there. You look over there.
You look over there. It's not me. We'll go live with CLTV upstairs here in just a second to get your news. Do we need a break before we do that? Quick break and we're back on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
913, how much do you think an average scholarship is for college?
An average scholarship?
Yeah. Like when I was a merit scholar,
yeah,
I got $500. Of course, that was 1979.
I'm going to guess 10 grand.
Well, you're right in the middle. Yeah, you're right in the middle. The average scholarship ranges from $5,750 to $15,680, depending on if you're a public or a private school.
How about that? Thank God it's gotten better.
Yeah. Now, if you've lived an exceptional life and you have an exceptional story to tell, anything's possible. And we love great inspirational stories, which is why we welcome a couple of people to the show right now. Lori Burns and Ray Cole. Ray is Associate Director of Admissions at East West University. Wabash in Michigan, Grant Park, right in that area?
Right in that area, yeah. South Loop-ish.
Yeah, two or three buildings there. And Lori Burns. And Lori, do you mind if I tell your story here? And then you can tell me if I'm wrong about any of this?
Sure.
Lori is a mother and a grandmother. And she wrote her story to tell the folks and this was just a scholarship you found online, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
She wrote her story to talk about living in a small apartment with two children and a granddaughter. The apartment flooded, and you had a job to support the kids and your granddaughter and fix the apartment, but you wanted to obviously pay the bills, make ends meet, but you wanted to do more. Next thing you know, you're going to East West University because you won a scholarship for how much?
Well, the scholarship
at the time when I applied for it, I wasn't given the amount. I was just told that it was a full scholarship.
Full ride.
Full ride, right.
What did it turn out to be?
Well, just finding out, it was $80,000.
How about that? $80,000. Yes. You know what?
Wow.
There you go. You deserve a hand.
Yes.
And the scholarship provider was who?
The scholarship provider is East West University.
Ah, yes. A great story, which mm-hmm. needs to have a little more publicity. And that's why I wanted to make sure Ray was here as well. First off, what are you studying?
I'm studying business administration with the concentration in management.
You want to start your own company at some point?
At some point, yeah.
Figuring out what that's going to be?
Yeah, still contemplating what which lane I want to go down with that.
Family must be very proud of you.
Yes, they're very proud.
I'm proud of you, and I just met you 10 minutes ago. Yeah. Yes. It's a great story, and it's a story that goes no matter where you are in life, whatever mm-hmm. your position in life, whatever you're going through in life, don't give up your dreams.
That's right. That's right.
What was your reaction? You seemed just so emotional and so happy. What was your reaction when you heard $80,000?
Do you think somebody was pulling your leg?
Yeah.
When the representative from school called me, I was at work, and I had just met with her during my lunch, and I went back to work. And I received the phone call from her, and she told me, she said, Lori, guess what? You're the winner. I just, oh my goodness. I just began to thank God because it's truly a blessing to be able to receive something like that. I've never won anything like that before. Earlier that year, like in January, I was in prayer and meditation, and I knew I wanted to go back to school, but didn't know where. So I was led to business school. And so while being online, browsing online, I came across East West University, and that's how I applied. So,
and you had no idea, again, so people understand, you had no idea that a full ride meant an $80,000 scholarship.
Right,
yeah, it's
right.
not a washer dryer. It's not a new car.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is life-changing.
Yeah. Yes, yes, education.
God bless you. Now, let's back this up a little bit. When you were high school age and college age, mm-hmm. you weren't able to go to college, or you went for a period of time?
Yes, I went for a period of time. I went to a community college right after high school,
okay.
Richard J. Daley College. Went there a couple of years. Then I became pregnant with my daughter.
Right.
I myself was a young mother. I had my daughter at the age of 20. Took some time off to take care of her.
Sure.
And then go back to work.
Life moves fast. Weeks turned into months, turns into years.
Yes, and then go back to continue my education and finish my associate's degree.
Okay.
And once I completed that in 2005, just continued to work until my next opportunity came. Which was
I love that you never gave up on this.
That's right.
What a great message for your for your kids and your grandkids.
Yes.
How many grandkids?
I have one.
One grandchild.
Just one. Yes.
Boy or girl?
She's a little girl, Emery. She's a year old.
I wonder if she knows Abigail Grace.
Oh, I bet you.
I have my first grandchild,
yes.
little girl Abigail Grace,
mm-hmm.
who's now 15 months old.
Oh. Okay.
It's the greatest thing, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
How do you balance being a great grandmother, a great mom, and working and doing okay in school? By the way, 3.0 GPA.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I'm going to first of all say God gives me the strength to keep it moving each day. Through the things I've been through, he kept me focused, determined, along with the support of my family, my mother Ruth and other family members. That support, that's what helps keep me going.
Everybody cheering you on.
Yes.
Now, where are you in school? Equivalency being, are you a freshman, a sophomore, a junior?
I
what are
am
you?
In my next quarter will be my last quarter. I will be graduating.
Yeah. You have to have a party. Graduation party.
Yeah. We want to hear about that when it happens.
Yes. Yeah, so next quarter, spring quarter, will be my last quarter, and I will be graduating this year.
When we come back, I want you to hear from Ray about East West University and why he thinks and everybody over there thinks Lori is so special, and she obviously is. But there's just no reason to give up your dreams. I don't care where you are in life, what position you are in life.
Absolutely.
Long as you're breathing, you got stuff to live for.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, good for you.
Too late.
Yeah, stand by. More with the amazing Lori Burns, and you meet Ray from East West in just a second. 9:25, Steve Cochran Show continues. Follow me on Twitter, at Cochran Show. And the best time to do that is 2 or 3 in the afternoon when I'm punchy. I'm likely to write anything.
You do go on, well, not
rants.
Yeah.
Rants of what you're looking for.
A little
for.
Bit in the afternoon.
Lori Burns, East West University scholarship recipient. You met her a few moments ago. Let's talk to Ray Cole here for a second as well, Associate Director of Admissions at East West. So, Ray, is part of your job to go through all the scholarship apps?
Absolutely.
It's a tough call.
It is. It really is, because you have to look for stories like Lori's, people that can take this and really do something to improve their lives and improve their situation. You know, stories like Lori's are the ones that we're looking for.
Sure.
And right now, we are coming up on kind of that deadline, that crunch.
Oh, so people should get apps in now.
Oh, absolutely, because you got to give us some time to read through them and schedule the interviews. That deadline's actually on the 27th. It's coming up here this next Monday.
What a challenge to pick. How do you? What's the selection process?
Eeny, meeny.
Well, you did. You picked a winner here.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, too, that makes it so hard is because we have to do that personal one-on-one interview, because we also want to make sure that when we award these scholarships, that it's somebody who has that dedication, you know, somebody that is going to actually follow through and finish it and use the whole thing. Because the worst thing you'd want to do is to set somebody up on a path that they can't finish.
But how do you sit down, and Lori, you could chime in on this too, I suppose, but how do you sit down with somebody who is as nice as Lori, who's been through a lot, who's a mother and a grandmother, and she's working full time, and then go, are you sure? I mean, I know that's your responsibility, right?
It is. It absolutely is. And that's, you know, you have to ask the right questions. You have to make sure that, you know, they also understand the amount of dedication that this is going to add on to it. They have to know that there's going to be some late nights. There's going to be studying. They have to make sure that their family is on board with what they're doing.
You know, and that's tough too, Lori, because I know you know this because of your dedication to education, but Andrea, it's not the school's problem that you have family and kids and other responsibilities.
Right.
The school wants you to get a great education.
Exactly.
But your commitment for this scholarship is that you deliver the goods. Did you feel a lot of pressure?
I felt some pressure, but the most important thing, the person has to want it. You know, that's the thing. They have to want it for themselves. And that gives them the drive to go for it and to keep going.
Were you nervous?
I was nervous, yeah. I was nervous, but... You know,
but just, it seems like this is something you've wanted for 20 years or more.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess to keeping a goal in mind, you know, this is my goal. And to achieve that goal, I have to, in spite of, you know, obstacles and challenges, I have to reach that goal.
All right. So, Sandberg, Lori's going to let us know when she graduates because we want to celebrate her on the air.
Okay.
Because that's coming up.
Yeah.
But let's talk about East West for a second.
Absolutely.
So tell me some of the programs.
So at East West University, we actually focus in on degrees for behavioral science. We have biology. We also do English and communications. Of course, business.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little bit of something for everybody.
And all ages of students?
Absolutely. You know, so, you know, a lot of people tend to get really focused on, you know, my child's in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get school started in fall, get that plan going. But there's adults out there, just like Lori, that they can start now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no reason that you have to wait till fall. You know, you can sign up for spring classes. You can start school in the summer.
I think that's the college survival plan, too, for these colleges as a business, too. You got to make it more fluid because people's lives are fluid.
Absolutely. And the same thing with course scheduling, you know, is that, you know, when you sit down with an advisor, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we give you a course schedule that's going to work with your life.
And book buying, that's huge, you know.
That's true, too.
Reading online, do you buy the books? I mean, that's pricey.
If you could go back to school, what would you study?
Medicine?
Really?
Maybe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Medicine.
Or law? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that because you're working with Dave and I and you think we're going to need prescription drugs?
Yeah, I want to, you know, because you guys have set the bar so high, I just want to come up to your level.
Dave, what about you? If you go back to school, what would you study?
Education.
Be a teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wouldn't go back to school.
Well, oh, yeah, Steve, what would you study?
That wasn't an option.
Steve, oh. We appreciate that.
No, but I just like, you know, I like this
but
gig.
But if you were, you go to East
like
West.
This gig. Well, sure, it's down the street. It's convenient to parking.
It's close to your car.
Well, Lori, we couldn't be more proud of you, and
you.
I wanted to make sure we get a good plug-in, too, for East West, because I think you guys are doing great things.
And if I could, Steve, I want to mention, you know, it's not just that we're giving away a single full-ride scholarship right now. We're also going to be giving away a half-ride for 4 years.
Oh, that's great.
And 4 2-year book scholarships. So there's a lot of opportunity out there for somebody to come to East West and interview and take this step. You know, let's get somebody into a better career. The whole reason why we're in higher education is to change lives and do something better for the community.
And get those apps in by Monday, but go to the
by
website?
Monday. Yeah, go to the website at eastwest.edu. It's actually right there at the top of the page, so you don't have to do any extra navigation.
Great.
And then we'll get on the phone with you. We'll get something scheduled, and hopefully then you can be another success story like Lori.
Go do your homework, Lori.
Okay. I'm on.
Get ready for the party.
Yes, indeed.
Again, the website is EastWest.
EastWest.edu.
Nice job, all of you. And great work, Lori.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you with the grandchildren. You know, I don't know. Abigail, what, a play date?
Play date. A play date with the grandkids.
Okay.
You know what we used to call those? Put the kids together.
Now it's called play date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I use a website. It's, eHarmony. You're familiar with P-Harmony?
Oh, is that like?
P-E-E-Harmony. Yeah, it's a different website entirely, but it works for play dates and babies. Lori, thanks. Great to meet you.
Thank you so much. Great to meet you all as well.
9:31, back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You may have heard the Flanagan's Wake folks storming onto Dean's show a couple of Sundays ago. And they have stormed into this show. Now, we couldn't do anything about it because security wasn't paying attention. But let's have you guys introduce yourselves. You are? Well, let me turn your mic on. That might help.
Am I on?
You are now.
I'm Jennifer Pompa. Hi.
And Jennifer, you play?
I play Kathleen mostly, but I also have played Fiona, and I will be again.
Does the person playing Fiona now know that? Or?
Shh.
Okay.
No.
And you are?
I'm Chase Wheaton-Worley.
Okay.
I play Brian.
Okay. Can you play Fiona or not so much?
I need to put in rehearsal for that.
Okay. All right, fine. And in the lead chair?
I'm Jack Brownis. I'm the director of the show.
Yeah.
I was in it for many years.
And now you're tired of it.
And now I'm, I'm over it. I'm directing it.
bossing these
exactly.
People around.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you know off the top of your head how many actors have performed? This Flanagan's Wake in its 214th year, by the way, right now.
23rd year.
23rd year. How many actors have come through this?
In the Chicago production, I would guess there have been over 100.
How about that?
And we've also had productions in Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Minneapolis and St. Paul.
And here's the crazy thing. Tells you how good the actors are. Not one of them Irish. Not one of them.
No. Well, everyone's Irish in St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. We're very Irish today.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
All right. So tickets, where do we get them? Let's get the plug in.
We get them at the Chicago Theater Works, which is 1113 West Belmont.
It's very early for your brain to function at this level. I appreciate it.
Yeah. 1113 West Belmont.
Theater people at 9:45 in the morning. Right. It's cruel.
It's true. It is cruel for us.
Yeah.
But you could go online at chicagotheaterworks.com.
That seems easy.
And that's going to be how you find out when our shows are, because we share the space with Tony and Tina's wedding.
You guys get along all well?
Yeah, there's a couple shuffles in the...
Who's the biggest jerk in the cast?
Chase.
They have to think, no.
Chase, you seem like a nice person.
Well, that's why I'm an actor.
I understand.
Oh, my gosh. The first time I ever went to a real Irish funeral, Irish mm-hmm. wake as well, a friend I used to work with, his father was born in County Kerry.
Oh.
And we went, but they had the memorial here, and we went and paid our respects, and in the back there was a buffet, and they were tapping a keg. And he said, oh, you know, here, get your beer before the Irish, the fiddler comes in with the draw. And I went, wait, what?
It's a wait.
He said, no, have a beer. It's okay. This is what we do.
If you got the Rosetta Stone for Irish, wake is party.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's true.
Exactly.
It's true. It's a happy occasion,
like
unlike a wedding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my
That's
God.
More funereal.
That's right. Terrible, terrible occasions, wedding.
Now, as a director, how do you keep the show fresh? Have you thought about adding a love interest or a cute neighbor kid or anything like that?
Yes, exactly. or some sort of animal on stilts. But no, it's the fun thing about it is so much of it is improvised that we keep it fresh just from that. We ask the audience for suggestions, and the show lives on from that.
Has any of the audience members actually been frightened when you've chosen them to mock? And
No.
They all seem to enjoy it.
They do, but during one of the very first shows, this was 1994 when we first started the show, just a couple months in.
Are you original cast?
Yes.
Wow.
I came up with the show.
You must have pictures.
Well, there was a show where a relatively famous football player from the Detroit Lions came, and mm-hmm. there's a point in the show where there's a fight.
Mm-hmm. I know the point.
He jumped up and knocked us all over like we were bowling pins because he got so excited about there being a fight.
And wrong so, time for a roid rage, Mongo.
Yeah, exactly. And then he just sort of stood there sheepishly. I got carried away.
Yeah, a little bit. Since so much of it is improv, would we see, you know, if we went this week, maybe something about something ripped from the headlines this week?
Yes.
Trump? Mm-hmm. A Trumpism, maybe?
Sometimes. Okay. Sometimes we have Trumpisms.
It's in the news a lot. So
yeah.
There's no real news.
Yes.
But how does that work? Do the players bring in ideas?
It's completely improvised off of audience suggestions. We have them trained to just react to what the audience gives them.
Who are the plants?
There are no plants.
No plants.
No plants.
There's a fern in the back. He's lovely.
Yeah, he has trouble, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the worst.
He's always drinking, I should tell you.
Speaking of drinking, the note that all Irishmen drink heavily mm-hmm. and constantly. Dave's not Irish.
Well, that's true.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave drinks heavily and constantly.
Now, see, that's...
He's drinking right now.
You couldn't let it go, could you?
Not heavily, but constantly.
Look at all those beer bottles on his desk.
He's making a tower.
What is the percentage of people that come to the show that are Irish that come up afterwards and go, "You should meet my uncle. My uncle's in the show."
There is a percentage of that, yes. And they are very... Or they'll ask you, what county are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and of
yeah,
course.
That'll happen a lot.
We had the mayor of County Cork in last week before St. Patrick's Day. They had never been to Chicago.
Oh, wow.
He said, "I love this town." And I said, "Does it bother you? Because we go crazy for St. Patrick's Day with the green and the dying of the river." He said, "We love it. Yeah. I can't do it. I can't do the brogue." But
yeah. We love it. Was actually drunk. He just fell in. Yeah.
Was he wearing a big sash that said mayor?
He was, actually. Awesome. Yeah, he's a very pretty man. Yeah. What is your favorite part of the night?
In general,
yeah.
Or
yeah, and if you say once the show's over, so I can get away from Chase.
No. I think actually one of my favorite parts is when the mayor does the story, because he's in the audience for so much of it, mm-hmm. so it's a lot more pulling. And sometimes some people that get called on, you see them with the scared deer in the headlights
stare. Sure,
and it's fine. It doesn't matter whatever they say or don't say. It's a great moment.
See, I come from stand up. I've done a lot of improv as well, but I come from stand up. But some nights, I never buy into a terrible crowd, mm-hmm. you know, because that's nonsense. But there are some nights where the suggestions just suck.
Yeah.
What do you guys do with those?
We use them.
Yeah.
We have to use them.
We do.
And I think we've trained our actors well enough that hopefully they can do it in a creative way.
Yeah, we hope.
We hope.
We try to use our brains.
Or you get the excessively dirty audience that they just want to go dirty immediately.
Yeah. Those are often older audiences.
Is that right?
Sort of funny, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom and her friends, I could see them doing that.
Your mom and her friends?
Throwing out like crazy suggestions.
Very sweet. Yeah. Yeah, very sweet. I know Dean asked you all to, were you guys in with Dean? Or was it?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Asked you guys all to do a bit of a joke off. Who's the traditional Irish joke character?
I don't know if we have a traditional Irish joke.
No, it was always a joke about who was
like,
the guy
like
that was
Patty
featured
O'Reilly
in the joke. Yeah, it was.
Oh,
you mean like who's at the butt of all the jokes?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a name.
I like Patty O'Reilly. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds
I don't know.
Good.
We pick on several.
All right, well, each of you owe me an Irish joke. Stop screwing around. Who's going first? Chase, I pick you.
Right. I got one. So in this pub...
So far, Chase, it's not great.
It's just a preamble.
Okay, got it.
So in this pub in Dublin, mm-hmm. this Texan, this big old Yankee, walks in and he says very loudly, "I hear you Irishmen like to drink, so I have $500 American for any of you that can drink 10 pints of Guinness back to back to back." And the entire pub goes completely silent. No one says a word or moves or takes him up on his wager. In fact, one of the patrons just gets up and leaves the bar. And so the Texan, he feels right, you know, proud of himself for showing up all these Irishmen. So he goes to the bar, has a few drinks, and then about half an hour passes. And then the fella who left the bar, he comes back and he taps the Texan on the shoulder. And he says, is that wager yours still up? And the Texan says, yeah, still up. You want to give it a go? He says, yeah, I think I do. So the fella sits down at the bar, orders 10 pints of Guinness, and then pounds them all back to back to back in front of everybody. The entire pub is stunned, especially the Texan. And so, true to his word, he hands over the $500 and he says, I am amazed by that. I truly am. But if you don't mind me asking, where did you go for that half hour you were gone? And he says, well, I had to go to the pub down the street to make sure I could do it right first.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. I like that because it had some drama in it.
It did.
You thought maybe there'd be gunfire? You know, you didn't know where it was going to go in particular, right? Well done, Chase.
Well, thank you.
You're still in the show. A little shaky.
For now.
A little shaky, but so far you're fine.
You still got to keep up the good stuff.
All right, Jennifer.
Well, I've got a little story about Flanagan.
Oh, like this is who it was. It was Flanagan.
Flanagan.
Oh,
mean, if
made
it's
a road
Flanagan's
or
wake,
to meet you.
Know, yeah, you know, he was a wonderful fellow. And, you know, this one time he thought he could be a good man with taking care of an animal. Mm-hmm. So he thought he'd start out small. So he got a chicken egg, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And he was very kind to it, loving and, you know, keeping it warm under his bum whenever he drank his Guinness. And that's not easy to do without tracking it, you know.
Sure, sure.
But he did. And it was a large egg, so I thought it would be a big chicken, but it turned out when it hatched, it was actually a platypus. It was a platypus.
Well, you don't see that every day.
No, you don't. You don't. He wasn't sure if he was drunk already or not, but then he realized, no, it's a platypus. So he named it Pokey. And he let it roam on his land, had a grand old time with it.
Sure.
But after a while, he realized Pokey was a bit despondent, probably, you know, feeling a little alone.
And there's nothing sadder than a sad Irish platypus.
You know, all by yourself. So he tried to bring ducks. Ducks weren't getting along. He tried to bring beavers. And, you know, and he brought the otters around, and they were just snob. Terrible. They're awful to
him. What a sad story.
It is. So Flanagan decided he'd dress up like a platypus, right? So he put on the big suit, and he called himself Hokey. So Hokey and Pokey are dancing around, having a good time.
Right.
And every Sunday, you know, he read a little bit about the platypus that's from Australia.
Sure.
So he brought Foster's cans. You know, he would forego drinking his Guinness, and he'd drink nothing but Foster's all day Sunday with Pokey.
Right.
And Pokey perked right up all the way until he died of liver failure. Because Flanagan didn't read enough to know you're not supposed to give beer to a platypus. But he was a good man.
I didn't know there was science involved.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's just fantastic. And the good news for you, boss, is we're out of time. So you don't have to do your job. But I do want to tell you, and I mean this with all sincerity, I think Flanagan's Wake is the most consistently funny show of any extended run that I've seen, and I've seen everything. So I salute you for that. You should be very proud of it.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Yes. Website again for tickets?
ChicagoTheaterWorks.com.
It's a great night of entertainment. So try to be sober when you get there. We're coming back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.